the heart of the Gator Nation, Gainesville, Florida. It's the Under the Radar Podcast. Of the Under the Radar Podcast with Travis McLeod. I am Travis McLeod, and I will be hosting this show till the end of time. This is our first episode, so there will probably be a few things that are going to go wrong. I'm still getting a little used to the technology, but I think we have a good show for you today. The first guest on this show is Jay Tang, who some of you may remember as the drummer for the band Visionary. I talked to Jay for 3 hours the other night, and I've tried to edit this podcast down to around an hour and a half, so hopefully you won't lose your attention. Anyways, it's been a while, so let's just jump right in. We'll start off with what Jay's been up to in the past 9 years since I last talked to him. What have you been up to for the past 12 years?
Pretty much a hermit, man. I've been moving all over the place, and then I settled here in Crawfordville, which is a little town outside of Tallahassee, so kind of skipped over the Orlando scene and bolted up here due to family influencing that whole move.
Yeah. So what's it like living in Tallahassee? That sounds, I remember when we were getting ready to go to college, my wife was entertaining the idea of going to FSU, and I told her that it would be against every fiber of my being to move there.
Fan. That's right. Yeah, it's different. It's not a big city like, you know, Palm Beach County, like how that whole scene is. It's different. I mean, you literally have to drive to the north to get to the south in the state of Florida. So it's very southern influenced. The hospitality's a lot different. I mean, people are actually, you know, courteous to you up here, and I've never been flicked off in traffic yet, and I've lived up here since 05. So, you know, it's a family type reason, and then it's the whole festival itself, you know, where I get together with a lot of the kids I grew up with and the people I, you know, went to high school with and whatnot. So, you know, it's a good thing to do every year and just kind of get, you know, reacquainted with everybody.
Yeah, I know. I haven't been down. I usually go maybe like at Christmas or something, but it's like, do you find that it's kind of weird when I go down there now? It's like it's a totally different place almost.
Readjusting to the driving down there, I could never do it. I get kind of used to everything up here, like two-lane highways and rural dirt roads and whatnot, but it's definitely something I don't miss. I like visiting, you know, and catching up with people, but I don't think I could live back down there again. It's too crazy, man. I mean, the crime rate's different, you know, the people are different. I like my little peace and quiet that I have up here, because I live in the middle of a forest, and I don't have anyone bothering me, no close neighbors, and I can do whatever I want.
Yeah. At this point in the podcast, we go on to discuss the way that Jay and I met and some of our previous musical exploits, as well as the origins of Visionary and some of the things they went on to accomplish during their run.
Williams, yeah, it was freshman year, St. Lucius.
Yeah, it was Joey.
DeStefano. There's many ways of saying his last name.
Yeah, I remember we were like, yeah, man, let's start a band. He's like, I got this friend that plays drums. Like, you should come over to your house. He's got his own cymbals and stuff. I was like, all right, cool.
Sold you on the cymbals.
Yeah. I was like, all right, that works. I got drums. Yeah, he's got cymbals. We'll do it.
Usually you bring your kit. I'm like, hey, I'm bringing a bunch of brass cymbals. Sweet. Save me the trouble.
Yeah. And, so, yeah, so that was a while ago. Then I guess probably, I don't know, what was it, junior, senior year you guys got Visionary together?
It was in 2000 when it first started, so that was about the end of sophomore year. Sophomore
year. Okay, that's earlier than I thought.
Mike Calderera, David Simpson, and of course Joe. And we were just a four-piece without a singer. We tried many vocalists out, and I think it was David, if I'm not mistaken, that knew Ralph through the grapevine somehow, and we brought Ralph in after countless and numerous amount of different vocalists that, you know, they were, you know, they all had their own different, you know, technique and uniqueness. They just didn't fit the bill because we were just kind of experimenting with our sound. We weren't really chasing after anything. We were just kind of bringing in, like, I'm into, like, really heavy stuff, and Mike is into, well, at the time, he was into, like, Incubus and the Deftones, and I like the Deftones and Incubus as well, but David was into Primus. Yeah. Joe, he was just, I mean, you know Joe, he was into just about anything, from clown music to polka, yeah, for all I know, so, you know, and Ralph was more, like, into, like, hip-hop and just alternative rock and roll, so it just blended.
Yeah, and I was it your first sound or your first show? Was it Sound Splash?
And that was like one of the most interesting shows because we weren't expecting the turnout that we had, but we also had the support of the Groovniks and their following.
Right. Yeah, I remember that early on. Jim really helped you all out.
He kind of stepped in and kind of guided us along the way since we were just, you know, a really new band. And Mike did a lot of things with a band called Prolong earlier in high school. And you know, they did a lot of stuff. Me, yeah. I jammed out with just different, you know, cats from all around the county and didn't really do any shows. One of them being Josh Barber, which was one of my, yeah.
You know, yeah, I remember Josh.
Yeah. Just jam out and, you know. That was about it. Well, nothing serious, but Visionary was like the first band that I actually was able to do shows and like a little touring, you know, if you want to call it that. So, you know, but
right,
Sound Splash Records, yeah, that was an interesting show. I mean, we had a decent turnout. I just remember that place smelling like model airplane glue, and by the time you were done, it was you were gone. You're so just messed up from that smell. I'll never forget that show. It was good. No, you just walked.
No drugs required.
Just inhaled whatever was in the enclosed atmosphere of that place, and you were done.
Yeah, I think I maybe went to one or two shows there to see
Come-Ons. Matt Parker's band.
Yeah.
We did a couple shows with them as well on a larger bill. I think it was at like Club Orbit, yeah, when it was called Orbit at the time. There was like a Dawn of the Rock Fest or something like that with Poison the Well and some other bands, and I think they were on the bill. So
yeah, I think I remember Orbit. I never got to play there. I always wanted to.
You know, as big of a place that it was, like it was too much. I mean, for a local scene.
Yeah. Well, didn't they have, like, three stages or something?
Like, they did have some, like, national acts come through. I mean, we opened up for OTEP and a band called Noise Therapy and some other bands that were on that same bill, and that was a big show. We actually landed that last minute, but it changed from, like, Club Orbit to Club Ovation or vice versa. I don't remember the order of the names.
I think it was Ovation later
always
after
liked
it was
smaller
Orbit.
Smaller places like the... like Ray's Downtown Blues and Spanky's and the Kelsey Club. The Kelsey Club is my favorite because one of the best shows we played was with Darwin's Waiting Room, and I think it was Twisted Method. They're from Cape Coral, Florida, and the singer from Twisted Method is actually the brother of the guitar player from Mudvayne, who's now in the band Hell Yeah with Vinnie Paul from Damaged Plan and Pantera. So it was pretty cool to have that, you know, connection.
Yeah, I remember the Kelsey Club. Here's the thing I remember about that is they had a curtain on the stage, yep, which I thought was cool, and they had a backstage dressing room.
It was a legitimate dressing room. I mean, I kid you not, the mirrors, the bathroom, the couches, the coolers full of whatever they wanted to supply with. I mean, it was there.
Yeah, I remember I went to see you there one time, and I forgot who I was with, but we were like, yeah, let's go backstage, and we just went back there, and we're I was like, y'all got a dressing room? Like, yeah, there's a shower over here. And I was like, you have soda in here, too? And like, yeah, they gave it to us. I was like, I need to play here.
You might have been with, what was it, Joe Onimus. Because he went
probably
to a lot of our shows, he was, you know, not because of us, but he was just the local scene type guy. And Joe's awesome because he supported all these bands no matter what their genre was. I remember he used to pass out flyers and demos and...
Oh yeah, Joe's like the ultimate
and
street
the thing,
teamer.
Like, the best part of Visionary is it was during a time when there was no MySpace or Facebook or Twitter, and you really had to work hard
right.
to get the band noticed. Like, you physically passed out flyers, you sold merchandise in person, you talked about it, you promoted it. Now
right.
you just have to click a like button and, hey, buy my stuff off of this website, and, you know, we're good to go, man.
Yeah, you got, you know, 1,400 yep. people that like you online, but you play a show,
exactly.
you might see three or something. Yeah.
So that's one thing that I, you know, I do want to say that I, you know, I appreciate more than anything else, you know, besides the support, is the fact that I had the privilege of playing music in that time where the internet wasn't, like, influencing music as much. You know, there was, you know... There
right.
was Napster at the time, but you know that was in its infancy, and now you have all these, you know, other online sites. So it was kind of like the predecessor to what we have now.
Yeah, I remember Napster came out. That was great,
Stupid
and then they
Lars
shut it down. And
from Metallica,
they had the big fight over, like, Metallica was against it, and then I think. Like Limp Bizkit they actually sponsored one of their tours,
and it's funny now
and,
because like they did that whole lawsuit thing, and now they're just like, yeah, whatever, you can download our music on iTunes and whatever.
Yeah, it's like they're not really caring as much these days, I guess. Well, back to the sort of the evolution of the band. I remember when you guys were first getting together, and it was like, yeah, they got this band, and they got Mike from Prolong in it, and I was like, no way, the Prolong guy's in it, because I'd always, like, you know, heard of him playing shows, and I'd always see him around school, but I'd never actually, like, talked to him.
Same here. I never...
And, honestly, I was a little bit intimidated by him. I don't know what it is. Like, I was just like, he's one of the cool kids. Like, I can't talk to him.
Because
you know?
I never knew Mike before Visionary until he came to the very first practice. He, I always saw him around school
yeah.
as the guy with the dreads, you know, he had the dreadlocks, the blonde dreads, and
yeah,
I don't know, everyone was kind of intimidated by him, I guess, by just because of that, but he's like honestly one of the sweetest guys I ever met, because he was just really down to earth, very chill, great sense of humor, and
oh yeah, definitely, yeah, once I actually got to know him, he was totally different than what I had
yeah,
would
I mean,
have expected,
he was, you know, like, just a very generous person, awesome musician, and it was just that look was just intimidating to most people, and that was, you know, that was kind of funny when I first met him. He's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, oh crap, this guy's pretty chill, he's not like, hey, look at me, you know. I was like, oh, okay,
yeah,
cool.
Some reason I used to see him, I used to think of like Jimmy's Chicken Shack,
Jimmy Haha. Exactly.
He looked exactly
then,
like
you
him.
Know, he's got that little Brandon Boyd in him too, you know.
Yeah, I was actually trying to get him to come on the show, but I haven't heard anything back yet.
He just had a
show
with Leading the Heroes, I don't know if it was last night or the night before, so, you know, he's probably just kind of...
Yeah, I'm sure he's got stuff going on.
He's still going, and Leading the Heroes, you know, they're a different style than what Visionary was, and it's kind of interesting with that band, because I was drumming for them before they actually became Leading the Heroes, and then I was pretty much like one of the dead last people to quit, and then, you know, they got their drummer at the time and they formed that band, so I was kind of in the middle of that transition for a very brief moment.
Yeah, I remember when Visionary kind of everybody went their separate ways. And then all of the other guys in the bands and other bands were like, "All right, I want this guy." I was like, "I get Jay."
It was bad time for a lot of things. I mean, we had issues with Ralph at the time, so that was the first thing, you know, that happened, is Ralph got kicked out, and it was kind of like a domino effect, and then communication started lacking, and people, I don't know, started not hating each other, just kind of not really caring, I guess. I mean, I was kind of the guy that was silent. I do admit I didn't really say, you know, speak up as much as I should have. I just kind of went with it.
Right.
But, you know, things happen. It shapes us into who we are, you know, today. But, I mean, I'm still, you know, I still talk to them once in a while, except for Joe. I don't know what happened there, but, you know, Joe's my homeboy. We go way back. So, you know, when time works out, you know, whatever it is, you know, we'll come back around at a full circle.
Yeah, he seems to kind of come and go. I know I've seen him on Facebook, and then he like, you don't see him for a while, then he comes up
yeah.
and
I mean, he's
updates something, or... Or he'll have another profile or something, and I'm like, all right, you have like 10 profiles now. Yeah.
But, you know, he's had a rough, you know, past couple of years. I do know that, you know, and personal stuff. So, and, you know, but, you know, right. I've always been there for him, so he knows that. It's one of those things you just gotta, you know, kind of wait to happen. But, you know,
yeah.
Like the visionary. Yeah. A lot of branching off. It's been a while. I mean, we basically came into the scene with nothing, got the support that we, you know, gained, and it was great for the first couple
right.
of years, and, you know, and then we disappeared just as quickly. So it, but it was a fun
yeah.
time.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you guys were, you know, it's like you said, you sort of, it was a real organic kind of process, and, you started getting pretty big for a while there. I know, like, you would be, you know, playing shows with these big bands, opening for OTEP, Poison the Well, you did a show with.
Those guys are, I mean, for a signed band, you'd expect somebody to be kind of like, you know, with their nose in the air, you know, chin up and everything, which is great, you know, and with a snobby attitude. But those guys were just, you know, hey, you know, we stuck it out like you guys are right now, and we, you know, we're proof that it can happen. It was kind of an influence.
Yeah.
I remember when we first played a show with them. I don't remember if it was their national tour kickoff local shows that we did, but after we played with, you know, them that one time, we actually started, you know, jamming out to a couple of their songs during band practice. So it was kind of, I guess you can say they were an influence, that, you know, in some level. So yeah, it was
yeah. Yeah, and then let's see. So you played all those shows. I know you guys actually got me my first show. My first show was opening for you guys at a
yep
at a Raise, and you and Joe were my
yeah,
backup band.
And it could have gone better, but it could have gone, you know, a lot worse. You have a clip on YouTube, as a matter of fact, in which I commented on earlier today.
yeah, I saw that.
I
yeah.
love watching that because it was intense. Like, Joe brought his like own level. I brought my own level of what we, you know, what we all are about. And you know, you were like, you're going with it, man.
Yeah, I thought it turned out really good because I mean, we didn't really practice or anything. I was just like, okay, let's just go up there and do
it. Your very first demos, and you know, I just kind of used that and best as I could, because you know, the drumming's different, like my style's different, but you know, I kind of incorporated my own thing, you know, and you know, it got you through.
Jay's a better drummer, that's what he's trying to say. I mean, that's what I'm saying, like,
believe it or not, I haven't played my drum kit in probably 3 years. You know, I'll bust out at like the, you know, electronic set, but it's been a while since I've been behind the
yeah.
actual acoustic kit. I know I still got it in me. I'll be a little rusty, but my primary instrument's, you know, guitar, because that was my actual first instrument. I was a guitar player originally before I even jumped behind the drums, and I'm self-taught.
Right.
I don't know how to really read music. I just kind of write it in my own understanding, and I mean, it's simple as that. I mean, it just came through that way.
Yeah, that's how I am too. I just, you know, I believe it or not, I actually learned how to play guitar. I wasn't even thinking of getting into music or anything. Like, I have an uncle who lives in Texas, and like my whole life, he's always been like an amazing musician at like anything he touches, and so I was probably about 11 or 12 years old, and we were going to go out and visit him for the first time, and I was like, oh, you know, it would be really cool if I learned, like a chord on the guitar or something. So, like, my dad knew a few chords, and he showed me one, and then, like, I started learning how to play songs, and I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. I'm going to stick with this, you know? And then before I knew it, I, like, wrote my own song and just kind of went from there, you know? But I actually kind of just wanted to learn, like, one song or one chord to just impress him, and kind of blossomed into this whole thing.
I wish my story was as peachy as that. Mine is a little embarrassing. You know, Seth Obregon. Okay, him and I,
yeah,
we go way back to fifth grade, and I've known him since like the 94-95 time period. We used to just listen to just Sublime and Korn and all sorts of different bands, and one day him and another buddy of mine, Dennis Sukel, who has no music background at all, we would bust out like these Tupperware bowls and put saran wrap over them and use chopsticks as drumsticks and hockey sticks as guitars, and we would just pretend to jam out. It was ridiculous, and we'd put on like fake mustaches and goatees, and there's a video somewhere I got. It's on the old school VHS, but that's how it kind of started with me. And then my neighbor at the time, when I lived in Lake Worth, he had this 1980, it's called the an Electra Invicta guitar. It's a very interesting guitar. It's neck through. It's not a bolt-on neck. It's solid oak. He gave this guitar to me free with three rusted strings, and I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. I played those three rusted strings for probably 6 months until they all started disappearing.
Yeah.
And then one day I was like, I need to buy some strings. So I kind of, that's how I kind of got introduced to like an instrument, and I actually still have that guitar. It's just kind of sitting in the background where I usually jam out, but I'll get on it once in a while. It's missing pieces, but it still works.
Yeah, you're just like, shit, how do I change strings?
As a kid, it was just those three rusty strings. That's all I had, and I would get my little Walkman, you know, little cassette player, because CDs were, you know, still pretty expensive, you know, and they're newer at the time, and I would get, like, the first Deftones album. It was called Adrenaline, and I'd get Weezer, and I'd just plug that in, and I would sit there and tune these strings to what I thought was like the tuning and figure it out. And then, you know, that's just how it exploded. And then I met Josh Barber, and then he's like, oh dude, check out these strings, they're supposed to go this way, and it just kind of went that direction. So it's weird.
You were kind of like rocking the Presidents of the United
Pretty
States
much
of America,
like, hey,
setup.
If that's how the guitar is tuned, that's how I'm going to play it. Little doom buggy, sure, we'll do that too.
I remember I started out, I had an old acoustic guitar that a friend of my dad's gave to him, that he gave to me, and I don't think that him or my mom thought I was going to go anywhere with it. They were just like, yeah, whatever, here you go. Like, well, you know, my dad showed me like a few chords, you know, but I was the same story for me. Like, I just got to the point where I was like, that was all I wanted to do, was just sit there and play guitar.
Yep.
Like my friends would be like, let's go do something. I'm like, no, I'm busy, I'm playing guitar. Like, you can stay here if you want, but I'm not leaving.
I'll tell you, till this day, I would play that guitar every day before school and every day after school on those same three strings until, you know, I got a full set. And then when I was old enough to get a job, I think I was like 15 or something, I was working on a bowling alley in Green Acres. I saved up money and I actually bought my first guitar. When I started playing that, I was like, man, I'm going to save up more money and get something else. Well, I bought a used amp, and I was like, okay, I'm going to save them and get something else. And that's when I bought my drum set. The same drum set that I bought is the one I used for Visionary, and I still got it to this day. I've never had another kit. I still have it, and it's just...
Yeah. The groove percussion,
you know,
huh?
That kit proved so much. It's not really about the make. It's just the drum heads. I mean,
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people, they get fooled by those labels, you know.
Evans drum heads, and I think it was 2-ply on all the toms, and my snare was coated. My bass drum was 3-ply, which was ridiculous because a lot of jazz drummers kind of tap into that. Not, you know, nothing hard rock, but I didn't know better. I just wanted to see what the sound was like, and I stuck with it. So I didn't follow, like, a following. Like, hey, here's my magazine ad. I play these drum heads. You got to play them too. No, I just bought whatever I could and said, hey, I'm going to stick with that. So,
Yeah, that's one of those things that, like, you know, you could have the most expensive guitar in the world, but if you can't play it, you can't play it.
I like playing guitars, you know, as close to stock as possible. I mean, I've had, you know, I don't stick to one brand. I mean, I've got Fender, Ibanez, Yamaha, Dean. I mean, it's all about the sound and the tone. And I mean, when I record, I'll record like an intro on like the Strat, and then like a verse or something on the Ibanez for the heavier stuff. And then, I mean, I might dub over that with the, you know, my Yamaha acoustic, and, you know, bust out the first guitar I had to do like choruses. So it just, I don't know, I just don't have a set direction when it comes to like brand or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I think I kind of did at first. Like, I always wanted a Fender because that was the first, like, my uncle's guitar was a Fender, and I just wanted to emulate everything he did. But, you know, over time, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to play whatever I have, you know.
I've played Fender. I've just never owned one until recently. I like the twanginess, and then when you go between pickups, you know, the smooth, I want to call it like the jazzy Hendrix style, you know, when it's clean tone, it's just, it's very classic Americana, in my opinion, when it comes to guitars. It's just, it's a nostalgic style, and, you know, a lot of musicians play them. And, I mean, a lot of these guys out there are like, I gotta have a mean looking guitar. I have to buy that BC Rich, you know, Warlock because I'm in a death metal band. Man, I've seen, no.
Yeah.
I mean, I own an ML made by Dean, which is the classic, you know, style that Dimebag Darrell plays, but I didn't get it for looks. I got it because when I played it, it fit, man. I mean, the whole shape and everything fit, and it's a whole different style and genre that I use that for. I played that in Drop D.
Yeah.
The Fender I play in Standard, my Ibanez I do, you know, C sharp, and then, you know, it just goes from there. So it's, I don't know, I've come a long way. And, you know,
I remember when I was, you know, back in high school when we were playing those shows and stuff, I kind of liked, I think at the time a lot of, you know, the new metal thing was really in, and it seemed like everybody had like an Ibanez or a PRS or something, and not that many people were really rocking Strats, and I was like, oh, I got a Strat, like, that's my thing. Like,
and it's, you know, but you're right, the Ibanez thing, I mean, that kind of influenced me too, because I was really into like Korn and Fear Factory and old, like the old school Limp Bizkit, you know, $3 Bill Y'all, you know, era, you know, and West Borland,
right.
You know, all those guys used Ibanez. But it's funny, like, I didn't buy a 7-string, I bought, you know, 6-strings, and they sound really good for that genre, and I can see why. But, you know, that guitar, I've just used it and abused it for just many different styles. I mean, I play through, I've got a full stack Ibanez. It's called a Tone Blaster that I got off of Craigslist here in Tallahassee for $300. I mean, it's solid state, and it works really well, but all the years before I got that, I was playing through, like, one 12-inch, you know, amplifier speaker, and that was about it, so I wasn't into, like, look at my,
I remember,
my 8 cabs or anything. I just found a good deal. I mean, I was looking, I was in the market for a new amp, and some college kid needed some money desperately, and he really did, because when I picked it up, he had a couch, a TV which was on the floor, and a refrigerator with a gallon of milk and stale french fries. He really needed the money.
Wow. Yeah, man, that's college, dude, in a nutshell right there.
I felt bad. I was like, $300, I felt like I should donate like 100 to him, but yeah, he was pretty cool. He was from Russia. He was from Russia, so he was like, yeah, you know, I need the money. I'm like, okay. My currency.
Here you go.
My currency is better than yours for now.
Yeah.
Yep. Well,
for a little while.
Now you here. $300.
Yeah. So what can I get for this? Like.
Yep.
Yeah, so you were kind of listening to like metal and like kind of the heavier stuff. Like,
yeah,
all along,
I mean,
then, huh?
I started listening to, you know, the first Korn album I heard that was in 1995, you know. But I did listen to a lot of, like, old school Megadeth and Metallica and Pantera's Cowboys from Hell when that, you know, believe it or not, I was a kid listening to that. My parents just never knew about it. And then I started listening to, like, you know, a lot of ska and punk bands, and you know, like Rancid and the Mighty Mighty Boston, Sublime, and Marilyn Manson. I was just a very diverse individual with music. You know, I didn't have one style that I had to go follow like most kids do. Like, I listen to metal, I'm gonna listen to metal, like, that's all I'm gonna listen to. No, I would listen to the local alternative music, you know, radio station, and then go home and blast, you know, one of the Korn albums that, you know, they don't play anything on the radio because, you know, it's just how it was. But yeah, I mean, I grew up with a heavy background, and it influenced me, you know, not just as a musician, but, you know, through life and stuff, because, you know, you can relate to lyrics just like, you know, anybody else.
Right.
But that was just my solid background. I mean, my mom would have her vinyls out, and she'd have, like, Bob Seger playing and the Eagles, and she had you know, the Beatles and all sorts of stuff. So I gotta give a shout out to the Beatles, because I know you're, like, one of their biggest fans.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I don't think you can get any better than the Beatles.
But, you know, so it was kind of like that. I mean, she didn't have, like, Black Sabbath or anything. I didn't get into Black Sabbath until, like, middle school. So it was kind of, like, backwards, you know. I didn't start on that and work my way up. I was going with the modern stuff at the time, and then eventually going backwards and then going forward again. So it was weird. I mean, I didn't really follow, like, the trend on, hey, what's hot and what's not. If it sounded good, I was going to listen to it.
Right. Yeah, I know. I was kind of like, I always kind of like, when I was growing up, we listened to oldies all the time. Like, we'd always have the oldies station on in the car, and you know, and that was, I didn't really listen to current bands till probably, you know, middle school. When I was in fifth grade, I listened to Green Day.
Green Day was a big influence on me,
I
too.
Mean, yeah, yeah, and I kind of became a fan of them the same way I got into playing guitar. Like, there was this kid in my class at the time, and he was always talking about Green Day, and I just happened to have Dookie in my house. I don't even know where it came from. I think the government just issued it to people because everybody had that record somehow. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, so I think just to piss him off, I was like, I'm going to learn the words to Basket Case. So then I went in one day, I was like, I know all the words of this song. And he was like, no, you don't. I was like, yes, I do. I'm going to sing them right now. And then I was like, oh, this band's actually pretty good. I'm going to start listening to the rest of this. And then, but for the most part, it was like oldies. And I always seemed like, whatever was cool is like not what I was, like, I always got into whatever was cool at the time, like later on. Like, I remember, like, in middle school, I was really into Oasis. And I would always have, like, really epic fights with people because, like, all my friends would be listening to, like Pantera and stuff. And I actually ended up becoming a fan of Pantera later on. But at the time, I was like, yeah, whatever. I'm listening to this. Like, and I remember, like, I had these fights with, like, a couple of friends of mine. They were into, like, 311 at the time. And I was like, what the fuck ever? This guy's been playing Tarzan with six. Fuck you. Like,
yeah, you know, now that I think about it, Green Day was actually one of the most influential, like, punker, you know, they call them pop punk for some reason. I call them punk. They have punk roots, man. But drumming wise, like
Gilman Street,
the faster drumming, like, that kind of influenced it. You know, also on guitar, I would sit there and try to play their stuff too, because my older sister was, like, heavily into them, and she, you know, she would blast that all the time, and I was like, oh, that's pretty catchy. And then everyone started talking about Nirvana and stuff like that, you know, and Sublime. It was kind of the 311 stage. I kind of went through a little stage of that. I wasn't too much into them, and they had catchy tunes, I have to admit. So I mean, their drummer is phenomenal. I mean, I love the way his kit sound. I was like, man, I got to get my piccolo snare to sound just like that. Man, it was completely opposite. But, you know, it was, like I said, it's all diverse.
Yeah, and Nirvana's another one I didn't get into until later. It was like, I knew they were really good, but I just, you know, I don't know. I was just like, this is what I'm into now, and I'm going to, you know, maybe I'll listen to it later.
Basically, if someone asked me to sum up my musical background in one word, I would have to say it would be bipolar. Because it really was.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell are you listening to now? It's like, well, sorry, you know.
I used to tell people I listen to everything from Peter Cetera to Pantera.
Wow. That's kind of... I don't even know what to say about that. That's pretty damn good. That is.
It's like two opposite, and like I don't think those two people, two bands would ever be in the same room at the same time.
You'd confuse somebody if you plastered a flyer with Peter's name all over it. Everyone's like, "Oh man, Pantera's split." No, wait a minute. No, they're not.
He's opening for Pantera.
Maybe it's a cover band. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Everybody's just like crying in the audience, and then Pantera comes out.
This isn't what we wanted.
Yeah, I remember I went to see MC Hammer a few years ago at Universal.
Oh, God.
And it was like me and my friend Paul, they had Mardi Gras, and we saw the flyer, and we're like, MC Hammer's going to be there? We're totally going. So we went there, right? And there's like all these people are kind of there to like, a lot of them were kind of smirking and whatever, and I was just like, yeah, but you came to his show. And then, like, me and Paul are sitting there, we know all the words, all his songs, and we're, like, rapping it and stuff, and we're, like, everybody's, like, looking at us, and we're, like, why are you here if you're not gonna, like...
I can't say I've been to MC Hammer, but I do have to admit, and I don't know what was going through my young mind, but I must have been... I don't know, like, 5-6 years old. I got dragged to a New Kids on the Block concert, man. I did not know what I was getting myself into. I didn't even know who they were. My older sister, again, she was into that at the time, and I just remember going to the concert with her, and I forgot who the adult was, but I don't remember much. I just know it was a very, very loud concert because of all the screaming little adolescent girls, and oh boy.
Yeah. I had a New Kids on the Block folder when I was in school. I think I was in kindergarten or something.
Band. I mean, I was a part of that history somehow.
And they were cool at the time, though. I remember walking around. I was in kindergarten, I think. I was walking around with my friends. We used to sing Hangin' Tough. Like, we were all awesome. We're Hangin' Tough, too.
Really messed up hairdos and, like, a rat tail or something like that. It was like what we consider, like, white trash haircuts now because it's out of style. It's really weird. It's like a mullet, but, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like the Full House era, you know? They had that really messed up hair, you know, the Jesse Kostopoulos mullet, you know, that was really cool. Jesse and Ripper.
You'd get, like, neon-colored tank tops or something.
Man, they were one of the biggest influences of my life. I'm kidding.
They were on Fallon, I think, weren't they, like, recently?
The clip and I showed my wife, and she started singing to it because she actually knows the words to the songs. I kid you not. I was like, really?
Yeah, that's
I know
awesome.
Every single one of these songs because I used to watch the show every day.
I remember we were watching the X Factor because I guess when Britney became the judge on there, and you know, Stephanie's really into, that's like her favorite singer ever. So
no matter what she does, she's gonna always be her favorite. Shave your head.
Yeah, and you can't shake the fandom. It's not gonna she'll follow her like forever. And they had like Mario Lopez, I guess, was the co-host of the show, you know. And they had like people were, you know, I think at some point during the show they were letting the contestants pick or something what they wanted to sing, and I was just like, man, somebody please pick "Friends Forever" by Zach Attack. Get him to play the drums. So I'm like, why can't I be on this show right
TV,
now?
I just watch.
At this point in the podcast, we decided to talk about Jay's experience as a father. For those of you who don't know, he had his first child while he was in Visionary, and he just recently had a daughter a few weeks ago. So at this point in the podcast, we are discussing his experiences with having a child while being in the band and his reactions to his new child. Going so far?
She's a little over 3 weeks old now. She's doing well. Yeah. She's healthy. That's all that matters. 10 years apart, you know, from my oldest, well, my only other child, my son Cason. So, yep, Cason came at a good time too. He came right towards the end of the Visionary day, so it was kind of like, yes,
right. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
she was when she was pregnant with him, and it was, he kind of has a lot to do with it. I mean, I found out about him right before I went on stage at Ray's Downtown Blues one show. It was the weirdest way of finding out, but we were standing on the side of Clematis Street, and she told me, and I'm like, what? So I had to go on stage like 5 minutes after she told me, and I'm I didn't mess up. I looked like I was a puppet. Like, I wasn't moving.
Yeah.
Like I used to. I would just hit whatever I had to just to get through the show, because running through my mind was, oh, I'm going to be a dad.
Yeah, I'm sure when you find that out, there's, you know, a whole bunch of different
things going on. Yeah, and everyone's like, you're feeling fine. I'm like, yeah, I feel great right now. I don't.
You're like, we got a new dedication of this set
tell the
tonight.
Guys till like 2 weeks later. I was like, yeah, I just had a headache. You know, I got through it. Everything was great.
Yeah, everything was cool. Just.
Oh, by the way,
don't ask me about this again. Yeah, I remember. I think the last time, or maybe the only time that I saw him, you guys were living
in
Stewart.
Yeah, that's right. He stopped by. I was actually just telling Nikki that, you know. Or her brother, because her brother stays with us, was telling him, you know, that, you know, the last time I saw you actually stop by was when I lived in Stewart. So, yeah, that was, good God, I lived in Stewart until 05, so it was probably like 04.
I think that was 2004. Because I was
That's
PSL
right.
at the time. And I was like, oh, you're right down the road. I'm going to come drop by. I think American Idiot had just come out.
Right.
Because I was trying to play Give Me Novocaine on your, like, little electronic set. And I was like, oh, this kind of sounds like that song on the new CD.
It was that exact time, you know, when that came out. I remember that clearly.
Yeah. So your son, he's 10 years old now, right?
This past Thursday.
Wow.
So, yeah, time flies, man.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I see your pictures on Facebook all the time.
When you were in that grade yourself, it just doesn't seem real, because I'm like, I remember fifth grade like it was yesterday. I mean, I'll tell you my teacher's name. His name was Mr. Crevis, and it was at Indian Pines Elementary. It was just clear as anything else. I mean, I remember his class, the way he spoke, just everything. I mean, it was that's where I met my, you know, one of my friends, Seth. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember I was on the wrestling team with Seth.
No, I forgot he was on the wrestling team. That's too funny.
Yeah.
I remember you were, but...
Hey, it's not exactly the most intimidating guy, but...
Hey, guys, you know, it's me, Seth. You know, like, jokester, but he always had, like, something funny to say, and he's very sarcastic, but, man, he was fun to be around. Still is, you know. I see him, you know, every time I go to Oktoberfest. He's still the same size.
Yeah.
I mean,
he doesn't grow, huh?
Here, he was wearing his fifth grade T-shirt that they handed out in fifth grade. I kid you not, he was actually wearing it. And actually spilled beer on it, and there. I was like, "Here, have some beer."
It's like a nice contrast of like the adult and the kid.
Yeah, I mean,
in him.
Even my friend Dennis was like, "Man, he didn't grow at all since fifth grade."
I remember one time we were driving home from wrestling practice, and this must have been freshman year, because my parents were driving us, and it was me, Seth, and Joe Onimus. He was on the wrestling team too.
Wrestler,
and Joe would always like imitate Seth's voice.
Yep.
So I was like, so Seth was trying to tell my mom like how to get back to his house, and I was like, hey Joe, you should tell her. Just do it in his voice. So Seth would like tell Joe, and then he would do it in her. And then my mom was like, oh, okay, like, she never even knew it wasn't him.
Like, because Seth was like, I don't talk like that. And Joe's like, I don't talk like that. Yeah, gosh, that was funny. I remember the backyard like wrestling stuff you guys would do.
Oh yeah, FHW,
the metal chairs and stuff.
Yeah, that was actually pretty fun. We had some outtakes and stuff. We used to kind of. The good thing about that was, like, we didn't, you know, we not only did we not do it, but I guess we couldn't have done it, was do it live, you know. We would record it. But it was good because we would map out a whole match, and then it was like, if you screw up in the middle of it, we're like, all right, take two. Like, this. It's like, it's a good thing we're not actually really wrestlers, because you couldn't do that, like, in a real show, you know. Like, hold on, everybody, I messed up.
Videos, because, like, it was a big thing. Everyone was telling me about it, and it might have been Joannimus' house, because I remember when he first met me, he's like, you play drums, you gotta play my kit. So he like demanded I go upstairs and play this drum kit, and I think he was the one that showed me the video. I could be wrong, but he's like, yeah, you're in the backyard like fighting, wrestling. I'm like, no, not really. He's like, oh, check this out. And I was like, watching you guys get crap beat out of you with all these chairs, and I'm like, what is going on, man?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the first day, the way that started out was, I guess it was like him and his brother. Maybe there was somebody else. I don't know. I think they were just bored one day and they decided to have a wrestling match. And then they called me and I'm like, yeah, man, we just had this match. Like, you want to come over and do it? I was like, yeah, all right, why the hell not? And then we're like, let's like make up a storyline. And so it got a lot bigger than I would have thought. Like, we had tapes and people watching it, and we used to have people, like, I think a couple times we had people come over and watch us do it live. Like, we would actually plan it out and
live little snippet of a performance. I don't think you were there, but it was one of those times Joe was like, you have to play my drums, because he was just always demanding me to play his drums. He walked me upstairs and he's like, oh, play my drums, man. And then he would leave. He would literally go downstairs and stand outside in the street, and he's like, man, that sounds good from out here. He comes back up, he's like, man, don't stop. I'm like, what are you doing? I think it was with...
Yeah. He had the Mapex Mars, I think it was.
Sweet sounding kid. I was like, man, that thing sounds better than mine, but, you know.
Yeah. I remember the day he brought those home. I saw him driving in the neighborhood, and I was like, oh, he called me up. I'm like, yeah, no, you got drums. I saw him. He's like, you got to come over and see him, man. Like, and, yeah, I mean, I used to hang out at Joe's house a lot. I mean, we were pretty close. And, I remember, like, the things I always remember about his house is, like, we always watch pay-per-view there, because he had a way of procuring it. I'm not sure if I should say
him and his,
how that happened.
Like, CD sales, but, he used to do, too.
Yeah. And he had a refrigerator in his garage that always had Pepsi in it. And I was just like, you are my friend. You have Pepsi.
Oh, man,
like,
I would have been an enemy because I don't like Pepsi. But that's all good.
We were sitting there one time. We were talking about, or we were watching like a movie or something. And then we were talking about how like ICP had some big tanks of soda they sprayed on the crowd or whatever. And I was just like, man, I want to go to one of those shows and find that tank
right,
and swim in it.
Giant straw. Not to drink with, just to breathe so you don't die.
Yeah. I was like, soda is the best thing ever.
Here's the diabetes. Throw me in.
Next, we decided to discuss what we're up to now and the reasons that we can't be in bands anymore and what we're trying to do to satisfy our creative desires.
Started shutting down a lot of the establishments, which was kind of weird. It's almost like the city of Tallahassee has a thing against local music. I mean, everyone's like, yeah. Of course, they're still talking about that band Creed because they came out of here because they.
Yeah, I was gonna say, isn't Creed from up there?
Issue, but whatever. I mean, but
don't they kind of rep Orlando though?
They seem to have that vibe where they're Orlando based for some reason, but they started here in Tallahassee. And
yeah. I was going to say, yeah. I remember I met a guy back when they had the Limp Bizkit auditions when West left the band. I met a guy in line there in Jacksonville who told me he was from Tallahassee. And he was like, yeah, I used to play shows with Creed. And he's like, they say they're from Orlando, but they're really not.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, they're kind of like a forgotten band now. I mean, occasionally you'll hear someone say, yeah, you know, Creed, they put Tallahassee on the map, but... I don't know. It's weird. I've tried starting bands here, and it just never worked out because it's always with college kids that are, hey, I don't feel like doing anything.
Right. I know my problem when I was trying to start bands is just I could never get anybody to, like, everybody to in the same place at the same time on
you
a regular
mean like
basis.
This podcast,
you know?
We've been trying to plan out.
Yeah. That's kind of how I became a solo act, just kind of by default.
Yeah,
I was like, well, I'll always show up.
Know.
So
it's just weird because I've never been a control freak until I started playing, you know, music by myself. And it's like, oh my god, if I wanted to start a band, I would have to stop playing and play. Here, let me show you how to play this. You know, you're doing it wrong. And I didn't. You know, I just kind of. What did Seth call me? He called me the under the rock star. Yeah, that's.
Oh, under a rock star.
And I kind of became a hermit, you know. And, kind of antisocial and just kind of kept to just family and that's about it and just do my own thing, but you know, eventually I just I want to start something, you know, not like go, hey, you know, I'm going to start a band and go touring. No, I just, playing is what I had fun doing. I enjoyed that the most. If it was three right. people at the show, so be it, man. Those three people at least stuck it out and enjoyed it. But, yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm going to try to just start, you know, recording and just putting it out there online, and people like it, good. If not,
yeah,
whatever.
Follow,
you know,
that,
I mean, it's,
direction now. Like I said, you know, when we started, we didn't have Facebook and MySpace and stuff like that. But now the time's here, and that's pretty much how you got to do it now. So I'll submit.
I'm just glad.
I'll submit to it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm just glad there's a way now that you can put it out there, because I remember in high school, I think I made, two or three records, you know, and I just sort of felt like, you know, I made another one, but nobody knows about it, you know, I'll just put this up on the shelf here and forget about it.
That you were giving out and selling and all that fun stuff. I still have it.
Oh,
man.
Nice.
It's all handwritten, your little signature on it and everything. Yeah. Yeah, it.
Yeah, I remember when I made Tales from Tourmaline, I used to make the, I'd like, when I wrote on the CD, I would try to make each one different.
I still have them. It was a white labeled CD, and you wrote Travis McLeod on it, and the name of the CD, and the little insert, and the sleeve had the songs written on it, and I was like, oh, cool, I still have them, man. In fact, I actually came across them about 2 or 3 days ago, because I have like a local band section in my CD wallet. Yes, I still have a CD wallet. Forget your iPod.
Nice.
And I came across that, and I was like, man, it brought back memories. That's kind of why, like, I viewed that Raised Downtown footage on your YouTube, because it just kind of like had a flashback. I was like, whoa, dude.
I remember that night too, because I remember like Joe called me. He's like, yeah, we got you a show, man. I was like, no way. And because I was like, that whole time I was like, I just want to play a show, like I want to get out there and do something, you know. And I still remember like opening the show, and I was like really nervous. I just remember thinking like, man, I don't know what I'm gonna do. And I remember like starting the show and starting up that song, and like right before I started to sing the first line, it just felt like a flame went up through my stomach into my throat. Well, like, yeah. And I was like, this is not good. I don't think I'm supposed to feel like
show,
this.
Yeah, my first show, I didn't have that opportunity to feel that way because I was in the back. I had
got a little cover.
People, like, you know. It's like, hey, they're going to take all the eyes off of me, and if I mess up, nobody will know because it's our first show. But yeah. I mean, your first...
It's Ralph's fault. Ralph,
your first show was... I enjoyed it. I mean, it was really, you know, last minute in a sort of sense, but we got through it, and it put your name out there, and I mean, it was pretty interesting. It was a different genre, you know, we were a different genre, and I forgot who else played it. It was a good mix up, so.
Oh yeah, it was me, it was you guys, I think there was a band called Semantic. And then there was a band, I think Never the Same or something like that.
You know what? I probably have the flyer.
Maybe
I have
not.
An album of all my flyers and wristbands and stuff from all the shows and all the craziness in between. But yeah, that Raised Downtown footage was my favorite. That one song, you know, it just
Yeah, I actually got that whole tape. I should.
Yeah, I mean, it
rip some
it
more.
Sounds pretty good. I mean, for the, you know, video capturing devices, because you know. People aren't going to know what a camcorder is. Like, what is that?
Right, yeah, I was just a, you know, regular old,
you know,
palm handheld,
you know,
camcorder.
Cassette you put in, then you put it in a bigger one, put it in the VCR, you know, that kind of ordeal.
Yeah, actually, my friend Stephanie taped that. I guess I'll give her a shout-out. She's got her own show, too, Side B Radio.
Yeah, I saw that. I was actually checking that out when you... made a post saying that, you know, you're going to do an interview with me and her. I actually recognize her. I remember seeing her a couple times, and so that's cool.
Yeah, so she was the one that recorded that her copy's the one that survived, because I was recording all of them at one point, and then before one of the shows, the tape didn't get rewound, so it, like, in the middle of the show, it went into another show. I think it was Roland
who
did it.
He was videotaping our shows all the time, too, so he probably did that.
I was like, all right, remember, rewind it. He's like, yeah, I got it. And I was like, God damn it, Roland.
Yeah.
Look what you did.
Yeah, Roland was a big part of that influence, too.
Yeah. Yeah, but I remember, like, I think, you know, a good bit of the shows that I played was just opening for you guys. And that was really good for a while there. We opened up Narcosis, I think. We were, like, on the first bill of that club. Or like, one of the first bills, anyway.
I'm trying to remember.
I think, like the come-ons were there. I think Matt Parker booked the show. And then he... Or at least that's how I found out about it. And he was like, yeah, this other band isn't going to play. You want to do it? I was like, yeah. Like, I think that was maybe like my second or third show.
That's... God, it's so long ago, man.
I think that might have been the one that I had my sister playing the drums with me.
I think it was... Yeah, I do.
Do you remember that?
Good God. You've had a lot of drummers, man. Because I remember Mike Calderero borrowed my set once to play, I think, a show at Spanky's.
Yeah, he was the drummer for me at Spanky's,
some reason, and he ended up playing like a couple cymbal stands, and I was like, yeah, whatever, you know. He's like, oh, crap, somebody walked off of your cymbal stands. I said, well, you know, hey, at least I still got the cymbals, right?
Yeah, it is what it is, you know.
I'm like, okay, it's all that matters. I can easily get or make my own.
Yeah. I mean, I got the video from that Narcosis show, and I had written a song at the time on my the Never Say Die album. It's like my one song on the keyboard, and the mic, the keyboard wouldn't go to the mic and vice versa. So finally, Mike grabbed the mic and held it up to my mouth so I could sing the song. And I was just like, "Oh no way!" That guy that I was scared to talk to is like holding the mic for me.
What do I do?
I was like, I have it on tape.
I got Mike from Prolong and Visionary holding my mic. Mike's holding my mic.
I was like, he's going to be my drummer someday. It's going to happen.
Just in a different way.
I was like, I'm cool for like 5 minutes.
I saw that right.
Five
I got
minutes.
It on tape. I'm signing copies of it.
I'm going to put this on YouTube.
I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm just going to find a way.
Yeah, it's like when YouTube exists later on, I'm posting this on there.
Print it out, I'll sign it. Yeah. I was there.
Man. Yeah, I think that was the night... I think that was when I released it, like, that CD. And I was surprised, too, because people actually wanted it. I was like, wow, there's, like, a lot of people that actually want to hear this. Like, you know, I felt like things were kind of going really good for a while, and it felt like things were starting to happen, and then all of a sudden it was like, guess what, we're moving to South Carolina. And I was like, what? No! Everything's, like, happening now.
And that's when you're supposed to gather everybody and be like, hey, you ever been to the Carolinas, folks? You guys follow me up there because it's not really a choice.
I was like, you could do some touring. Just come up there. There's
hills,
a lot of stuff happening.
Stuff.
I think one time when I lived up there, I guess there was some kind of confusion about a show down in Palm Beach, because I remember White Boy was showing me that they put it in the paper, like, you know, whatever bands they were, and they had my name in there, and I was like, I don't even live there anymore. Like, what? I was like, how did I do? Was I pretty good?
They're like, man, we need to get him.
They were like, maybe if we put his name here, he'll show up.
Put his name on there. Well, it's like
Field of Dreams.
You know, your fans, they couldn't follow you up there, so they're like, let's just give them false hope, and they'll pay a non-refundable, you know, fee, and we make money.
And they show up like this isn't Travis McCall.
Canceled
what the
due to moving.
he's not here anymore.
Like a while ago, he'll be doing autograph signings.
And then I remember, like we just have these other bands. Like, come see them.
We have this new band called Mavis Trey Cloud. It's a tribute band.
It's a tribute band. I remember I had moved back down, or I was going to move back down, and then I kind of had that, like, I don't even know what to call it, pseudo record deal, I guess.
Reading about that, you had like online blogs and sites and stuff like that. I remember you posting something.
Yeah, there was this record company, you know, and they sent me a contract there. I don't know. Like, I guess they didn't have any money or whatever, and it may have just been like some guy who was talking a real big game in retrospect. But at the time, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go on tour and everything. Like, you guys were going to be the band, and it was going to happen, and then they didn't have money.
found out it was a guy that just owned a car wash on, like, a local street corner, and yeah, he was just like, yeah, I'm bored.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I'm going to just give these people, like,
yep,
I'm going to crush their dreams.
A shopping cart. What? What is that?
So that's why the name of the label was Dishwater Records. Because he's a dishwasher, you know.
We're going to try.
Something. Which, there's nothing wrong with that. Just saying. Don't
Travis
try to act like more than you want.
You know? In a hover round.
Yeah.
Going to go to the Grand Canyon. Yeah, there you go.
Going
to
jump the Grand Canyon on one of those things.
Man.
Evel Knievel.
Gosh, yeah, that's so long ago. I miss it. I've always missed it. It was a big part of my life. You know, it was just, I met a lot of cool people. I mean, the people from the Groovenecks, you know, they were fun to be around. Some of them were a little questionable, but it was cool,
yeah.
Seeing like the behind the scenes, because they were a signed band with Spitfire Records, and they had their manager. They had their manager with them,
yeah,
at all times, whenever they were doing shows, and it was kind of interesting to see the process behind like what he does for them, and how big of a dick he was too at the same time, and he like, how he didn't like us at like some shows. He did not like us. He just didn't seem to like us. And then other shows, he's like, great show, guys, and we're like, what the hell? And then you know, then Jim Austin came along and you know did his thing with us, and brought us into the studio at Port St. Lucie, and. Yeah.
I was gonna be part of the show here tonight. I remember when you guys did that. You recorded at it was a Mind Like Water studio, wasn't it?
Avalon Studios.
Avalon.
Yeah. That whole process, we went in there blind because like the only person who really had any studio experience was Mike. You know, with the Prolong demo.
Right.
This was a lot different than that for him. I know that, but we kind of. We practiced what we wanted to do. We went into the studio. Usually, you know, it takes a while to, you know, record everything, mix it. You know, it's a couple days to a week, maybe a couple weeks.
Right.
We did that whole album in one day. One day. And
yeah. So was it five songs?
It was five songs. And it was, I don't know, my whole perspective is with that whole, because I've never recorded before. And I did all my drum tracks one take. Whether I liked them or not, I wanted to leave it as that because I wanted it as raw and as real. I wanted to capture that moment because you can't go back and recapture it. You know, like the power behind it. I'm like, okay, if you guys say I messed up, then so be it. It's going to be on the demo whether you like it or not because it fit. And that's how it's going to be. I'll hear it, but a lot of people that are going to listen to the CD won't hear what I consider a mess up. So I left it as that. You know, Joe and Mike, they did their own thing. Like they you know, dubbed over different guitar parts. You know, they redid a lot of things, and I didn't want to mess around at all with it. I mean, it just, I left it as is, and I was the first one done. So I just kind of sat there and just cheered them on, like, go guys.
Just kind of sit back and watch the process.
Because it was like clear into the night, and you know, we lived in, you know, Palm Beach County. This is St. Lucie County, you know, so it was a little bit of a drive. So we had to like haul our gear back, and we had school the next day, and you know, we're still in high school. So a couple of us went, a couple of us didn't. I mean, Ralph wasn't in school because he was the oldest, but it came out good. I mean, I heard a lot of criticism, but hey, whatever. You know, it was a
Yeah, I remember thinking it was great.
Was good. I mean, when you blasted it, that's the thing I learned in the studio, is when you blast it on the studio monitors, it's going to sound awesome. When you play it on a regular CD player, it still sounds awesome, but not as great as yet. No, it's just...
Not as... Yeah, you don't have those, like, $3,000 monitors. You got some earbuds or something.
Yeah. Not as sharp. What's going on here? But that's just how it was. But, you know...
Yeah.
We were good with it. I mean, it was a $5 demo. Pretty much looked at it as a dollar a song, quite like iTunes these days. You know, it's kind of equivalent to the iTunes whole scenario. It was about $1 per song.
Now that you've heard all about the recording of their first EP, We're going to play a song from it. This is Away from the Phone from Visionary EP Volume 1. Next up in the show, we discuss life after the EP and some videos that the band made during that time and how they came about.
An amateur company called Horror Productions. Yep.
Right, yeah, Brian Vale, right?
Shoot like fake horror movies and stuff like that. Well, they also would film our shows, and actually got two CDs. Yeah. They recorded a whole live set at the Kelsey Club.
Right. Do you have that footage still?
Yeah, it's on VHS. I just don't have a way of converting it, but I do have the CD, the audio from it.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to say it's like 12 or 14 uh-huh. songs long, and then we did an unplugged set. It was just Ralph, Joe, and I at the Kelsey Club. We did an acoustic set. I played bongos, and I also played acoustic guitar on the only song that I wrote with Visionary. It's called Taken. And I wrote that song, and then they just kind of put their own little taste and whatnot into it. But, we did about 6 or 7 songs during the acoustic set, and I have that on CD as well too. It's you know, so technically we got 3 CDs out.
Well, they did some of that video recording at other shows too, right? Didn't they do one at Spanky's?
We actually had a couple shows where they would plug into the soundboard, so they got better audio quality, which was it was kind of interesting how that came out. There was like a slight delay, but you really couldn't pick up on it unless you really picking apart everything. But And then you had the grainy rolling, you know, video footage. Yeah, him like in
VHS
the middle
camera
of like, the pits and stuff, and getting thrown around, and like the grainy footage. But yeah, it was still good.
Right. Yeah, I remember. I think I was in like when you guys were tearing down at the end
of
one of those Spanky
like,
shows.
Makes my head itch. It was a Limp Bizkit beanie, and you kept saying it makes your head itch.
Yeah. I think I was doing that on purpose. I was just like, I'm gonna do something. I'm gonna be in their video. Like, people are gonna be like, "That's the guy that was
like
his head itches."
Like, it's a missionary home video. Whoa.
I was like, I gotta do something to like people will remember
like
who I am. Like,
my head itch.
I was gonna be like, "Who's this guy that keeps coming
Roland's
back?"
Like, okay, videotape you anyway. Cool. Let's do this. I remember that.
There's like, get out of the way, stupid. Like, we're trying to film Visionary.
Yep, that good old days.
Or one time I threw my boxers at you
that.
At
it
the end
on
of the show.
Film too. They landed on my drumstick and I just kind of flung them back. I'm like, what the?
I think you didn't know what it was at first. You're like, at first you were like all relaxed, and then you realized what it was, and you're like, what the hell? Like, threw.
Spanky show, or was that at, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was indoor. Yeah, I think. If I remember correctly, I think Nikki might have been in on it.
No, I think.
Yeah, I think we were talking about it, and I was like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah,
should I do it?
I remember you're
like,
yeah,
most
girls
like,
right. Take their bras off. I wanted to be different. Because, I saw you coming back from the back, you know, where the bathroom was. I was like, man, Travis is missing our show. What the hell is that about? And then next thing you know, like, a pair of your boxers just come flying at me. Land on my stick as I'm about to hit my snare, and I'm like, what the hell? And I just kind of flung them, like, oh my god, because I figured out what it was. I thought it was like a shirt or a bandana. Nope, I'm looking at stuff that covered your chest.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
you could see the exact moment too when you realized what it was. Your face just went from like relaxed
like, oh,
to this
god.
Like horrified look of like, what the hell is this?
Yep. No,
did you know where it came from? Or like,
I'm like, oh, okay. I feel a little bit relieved because I didn't want somebody's like, you know, disease-infested boxers landing on my drumsticks, and I'm like,
I was gonna say that's like a little extra dimension of horror. You're like, not only are they boxers, but
they
don't know where they came from, just
on
randomly thrown at you,
partially on my wrist. And you would think I would like be like horrified and you know grab another drumstick, but no, I just kept playing. I was like, whatever. If I'm gonna get something, it's gonna be now. Live the rock star life.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like it's already touched me. I'm just going
get a disease right now.
That's how you're behind the music. It's not gonna be like something cool. It's just like, how did you get AIDS? Like, well, I was playing drums at Spanky's, and then
I absorbed it. Yeah,
threw the boxers at me.
Like 20,000 women. No, just some random dude's boxers, man. It was a good time.
You're like, what are you saying? That's not
rock
and roll.
I still got a disease. I just haven't developed the coke habit yet. That's coming soon.
I always felt like my, like, if I had a behind the music, my tough story would be, like, everybody has drug stories, and I'm, like, I guess a lot of people that know me know I'm pretty straight edge. Mine would just be like, yeah, I eat too much pizza, and I have high blood pressure or something.
That was the one thing, like, Club Ovation, Club Orbit, whatever, same venue, different name.
Yeah.
We were playing the Dawn of the Rock Fest, which was like a 3-day or 2-day weekend festival, and it went into like the morning hours, and then it would like, you know, they would take a break and pick up like early afternoon and continue on. Backstage, went to go use the restroom. Some dude is standing next to me at this urinal doing lines of cocaine. I swear he was just doing lines off the urinal as he was pissing.
Wow.
And I'm like, is this for real? And he goes, hey bro, you want some? I'm like, nah. No,
okay.
I'm gonna go pee in a stall now and cry.
Yeah, I have my little,
I was like,
barrier.
Oh my god,
here.
Dude! Yeah, he was going at it, man. I was like, okay,
yeah,
enjoy the show.
It's kind of takes coordination though to do it while you're pissing.
On,
though,
I
like,
guess he was just no straw
he's a
or
pro.
Whatever, nothing rolled up. He had his nostril on that damn thing.
Oh, right off of the urinal,
the
then.
Just kind of like slouched over and peeing at the same time, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was peeing. Maybe he was just standing there doing that, but I actually was joking with him. I offered him the counter in the handicap stall. I was like, you can have my counter if you want. He's like, I'm good. I'm like, okay. It was...
Were you there for the night at... I mean, I know you were there because it was your show, but we were hanging out beforehand, we went over to the Dunkin' Donuts.
I frequent a lot of Dunkin' Donuts on there.
It was like me, Joe DiStefano, and Joe Onimus. We're hanging out, and we're like, man, I smell donuts. Like, I want some donuts. And there's one, like, right across the street. So we go over there, and they're closed. And then somebody says, like, hey, I remember seeing this episode of Seinfeld one time where they had thrown out these giant bags of donuts. So we're like, oh, let's go see if that's true. So we went out back to the dumpster, and we found them. They had these giant bags of donuts, and I'm like, fuck that, I'm eating them. Like, they just touched other donuts. I'm grabbing it from the middle.
Because I would have been in there with you guys, and I definitely would remember that. And sorry to be off topic, but you mentioned Seinfeld. I have to ask you, because a lot of people agree with me, and other people, and, you know Brett Ehlers. Brett Ehlers even pointed this out. Yeah. I didn't even mention it to him. Doesn't Seth remind you of George Costanza? Yeah, okay, just making sure the mannerism and stuff. All right, back on subject. I had to throw that out there. Sorry, Seth, if you do ever listen to this.
You better listen.
Or we're going to throw our boxers at you, and you're going to get old man disease and have kids one day.
Like, if our friends don't listen to this, we're not, like, no audience.
Clap for ourselves.
We should just lie about it. Let's just post, like, yeah, this was great. Yeah, million
we had
people
a
listening.
Skype audience of 12 quintillion Brazilian. I made up a new number.
The podcast is number one on iTunes the first night.
Billboards is jealous. The Billboard people are jealous because we're not cool. I don't know. Whatever.
This is the Under the Radar podcast.
On to stay there, and he ran home because he lived in that area anyway. Picked up a demo and gave him a demo, like, right there. He got his picture taken with Bijan, and then, like,
surprised he stuck around.
I don't know how I got it, but I got a picture of Ralph and Bijan just standing there, and little Spencer's, and these poor guys trying to shop, and Ralph's like, can I get a picture? It was weird. And then, like, 3 years after that, I actually ran into Bijan at the Atlanta airport with the bass player. They were getting off the plane in Atlanta because they're an Atlanta based band, and we just kind of nod and said sup and went on our way. I wasn't like, oh my god, I was actually going to a funeral in Philadelphia, and that was my my pit stop, and so I wasn't like in the
connection
mood to, like,
yeah,
get all like, hey, but it was cool.
Yeah, man. I remember. Doesn't his parents live down in South Florida or something?
In that area. And Ralph, actually, when he was doing, like, personal training at some gym, he was actually training.
Yeah.
He was their personal trainer and didn't even know it.
Yeah, I remember a few of my friends were like, "Yeah, do you listen to Seven Dust? Like, that guy's parents live here."
Ralph
didn't know
that it was actually his parents, that he was their personal trainer, and, like, he put it together, and he was like, oh, crap, let me go get you a demo. Of course, they're not going to, it's not their duty to, hand the demo down to the right people. It's just something for them to, like, just collect. It's like, okay, let me give this to my manager, and he'll get it to this publicist, and, nah.
You got to take the shot.
It was a story to tell, and unfortunately...
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened with Limp Bizkit. I mean, Fred was tattooing him. Fieldy and Head, I guess. Gave him a demo and
horn on his back instead of corn. Look like H instead of K. It's like, oops.
Yeah,
that's how that started. But I mean,
and then Limp Bizkit kind of was actually bigger than Korn for a while there.
Now that I think about it, if I ever want to get somewhere and I meet a celebrity, I'll just pretend I'll be a massage therapist. Yeah, I'll give you a massage.
Yeah.
Not my band. Yeah, no happy endings.
Just no happy endings. Just
that's
you're like, I want the contract up front if we're going to have endings. This is the Under the Radar podcast.
From back in the day that were part of the scene... Roland and Brian.
Yeah.
I mean, you had, like, the girls, like Lisa Lupino and Angie and...
Yeah.
Yeah,
Angie Snow.
I haven't talked to her in years.
I haven't either, man. Like, it's probably since then. I talked to Lisa just recently. I sort of reconnected with her on Facebook.
Every time I hear like the live performances, you hear all these girls screaming in the background, and you would think it was like a bunch of girls. No, it's just Lisa and all them. It's like, you guys are great.
There's some discussion that she might actually be a man, I think.
She always made me feel this from what I remember that it supposedly existed. And she would like, I don't know how she did it, but she made one visibly like appear on like her inner thigh. It was weird. I was like, okay, you've got a penis.
She signed my yearbook, Mr. Lisa
she
Lupina.
She told me she had a penis and that girls don't fart.
This is the Under the Radar podcast. Yeah, I feel like it's going pretty good. I like doing. I'm going to try to get some more interviews. I got my friend Stephanie lined up. I talked to AJ last night.
Little AJ.
And he said he'll
he's
do
got,
it.
He's, so I'm sure he's got more stories to tell than any of us combined. And he's had it.
I thought that maybe I'd try to get Carl to do it too, but I don't know. Like, I'm not super good friends with Carl, but I think he knows who I am. Like.
Yeah, that'll be another interesting one. Carl is funny as hell. I remember he's an awesome like gymnast because he you know he'd do all those acrobatic things and that was crazy.
Right.
Yeah,
he was like a coach or something, wasn't he?
Something like that. I know that he was always doing flips and stuff and fire breathing, and he always added that to his show too. So he was always like flipping around with his big hair and spitting fire and. Pranking their keyboard player Josh. I don't know if you remember him. He was the you know the guy that was in the band, and they used to miss him so bad.
Right.
They had a show when he was playing his keyboard. He always lifted up his keyboard. So
he wrote fag on it, right, or something.
He didn't know. He just kept flipping the keyboard up, facing the crowd, and everyone started laughing. And he was just like, "Cool, man, I'm getting cheers." And everyone's laughing.
No idea.
Carl couldn't even sing like part of a song because of it. And I'm like, I'm on the side of the stage going, "What the fuck are they doing?"
I bet you know what though. Like, the reason I know that is like my wife actually told me that story.
That's too funny because I remember that because it was just. Nobody expected it, and all of a sudden I look up and I'm like, "There's this." Big white piece of paper with a Sharpie, you know, written statement of some sort. And as I looked at it closer, I'm like, "Ah, shit!" Big.
You're like, should I laugh at this?
And when he like stopped moving, and he was holding it up, and I'm like, "Oh no, man, who did that?" And then I looked at Carl immediately and everybody else, and they were just laughing as they were playing their show. And Josh is just like, with it, like, "Yep." Yeah, that's cool. People like us.
I remember when I, you know, like, I mean, you guys would always play with them, but I don't think I really interacted with anybody in that band too much until AJ was in the band, because I knew AJ pretty well.
Before he even started playing in the band, he had one of my elective classes in high school, and he knew a couple. It was way before the Groovenecks and Suicide City or whatever that band was called. And
I got you beat. I met him in sixth grade.
Well,
I think we and him actually played together for a little while. We had I think you were in the band. We had a horny dog. Remember? You were in sort of a little bit of an incarnation of that.
It was just a blend of stuff, like. Playing like Joe was part of it, and then you know AJ and I remember some of the songs and like ass and oh god, in fact, you know what, I think I might have a demo of that somewhere.
Yeah that made it onto my first seat. I think that might be the only song that I recorded with Joe that's still where I know where it is, because I remember we did that whole tape.
It was such
and it was
a
like me and him.
Whoa.
Yeah. And we don't have it anywhere. Like, he doesn't have it. I think he said you found it at one point and then you lost it again or something.
I'll have to look for it, man, because.
Because, I mean, we've been looking for that for years. And, Joe wrote this song called Golden Days. And it was like. I guess he was going through his Rage Against the Machine phase at that point, because it was all about how he hates the government. And I was like, dude, we're like 14. Why do you hate the government?
Because they make me go to public school.
God damn it.
Sex, drugs, and chicken, and then, damn it. Hitler!
And like, what else did we have? No, wait. House of Mirrors, I think, came out of those sessions, too. So that's on my first CD. Yeah, but it was... I mean, we used to go to his house, and he had that reel-to-reel recorder.
That's the one we were actually going to use that to record the Visionary demo before we actually decided to go to a studio, because his dad, Pete, you know, he came up with it, and we recorded, like, half of a song, and I don't know what happened, but yeah, the reel-to-reel, that was awesome.
Yeah. I remember when we were doing that tape, like, I think probably the good 3/4 of the lyrics and music we just made up that day when we were like, we're going to record and we're just going to go in there and do whatever we want to do.
I remember hearing
see what happens.
For the first time, because you guys jammed it out for me after you got the actual, like, things down for the song, the lyrics and everything, and you're like, this is called Ass, Ass, Ass. I'm like, what? And then you guys just went at it, and I'm just dying because I just didn't know what to think. I'm like, this is too much.
Yeah. That was a magical day in the studio. It was my bedroom. But it was my bedroom with a 4-track recorder and one microphone.
One way, right?
Yeah. It actually came out pretty good for what it was on.
4-track Visionary, we actually recorded full-length practice sessions with a regular audio recorder that you would use to do, like, interviews.
Voice memos or something.
So bad, because it was like a 2-second, it was slowed down 2 seconds when you do the playback. So it all sounded like we were huffing something when we were playing. Like, especially Ralph, he's like, oh. Whoa.
He's like Frank Sinatra all of a sudden.
There's actually 4 Visionary CDs. One of them is an unauthorized CD that Brian's brother, Jeff, Brian Vail's brother, Jeff, altered. He sped it up, and then he slowed it down. So we have the Visionary demo, all 5 songs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we have
the official
5
one.
Songs. We have 5 of those songs that are all sped up, and then there's 5 different versions, you know, of them, like, slowed down also. So we have, like, altered versions of those songs. So it sounds like we're typo negative, and then it sounds like we're the Chipmunks. It's pretty awesome. And the sound quality is just as good as the original demo. It's just altered just a little bit. So I had to throw that out there. Just in case anybody wanted to purchase or download the Crackhead edition, let me know. It'll be free.
Yeah.
purchase it for free. Monopoly money, and I'll have it shipped to you 3 days from ago.
Comes with a dozen eggs.
It does. Dozen farm fresh eggs. You name it.
Now, do you actually have? I know, like, at one point you had made a MySpace or something for Visionary, right?
Still up.
Is it still up there?
I think it's myspace.com/visionaryband or something like that. It's still up. I'm the administrator for it. Nobody else has access to it. It has the demo songs, and it also has one of the unplugged versions of one of our songs that never made it to demo, and a couple live tracks from the Kelsey Club. So it's still up and running. I was going to open it for downloading, but I never got around to it. So right now it's just available for your listening pleasure. It's I think it's myspace.com/visionaryband, or you can just look up Visionary Band. It'll take you to it, I'm sure. Who uses MySpace anymore? I haven't logged into that thing. And yeah, you know,
hipsters.
They're typewriters, right?
All you people out there, go to MySpace and listen. Do you guys have a Facebook too, though? Didn't you do a Facebook thing, or
I
was
never
that?
Got around to that actually.
Have pictures of the shows on your Facebook? Is that what it is?
Dedicated to, you know, Visionary, but I was actually thinking about opening up a Facebook page, and I know everyone out there that's listening is probably like, "Do it." So, yeah, I'll
work. Yeah, do it.
Thank you for saying that. no, I was actually.
If you're on Facebook right now, why don't you head over to the Under the Radar podcast page and like that?
Like it.
and share it too.
Share it like you would herpes. Just share it. Nah.
like you would a pair of disease-ridden boxers.
Visionary. Yeah,
we're into that sort of thing here.
I gotta find that video footage, man. It's just classic. Just the classic.
Yeah, you got all kinds of good stuff, man.
It's on the old school VHS, and I have a converter, but it doesn't work right.
Yeah. Do you have a way you could dub that onto another VHS tape?
No, unfortunately, I don't.
Because I was going to say, I have a DVD thing I could hook up a VCR to and rip it for you. If I don't want to take... obviously, I'm not going to take your original copy, but if you could dub another VHS.
I'm trying to see if I can do that now I'm thinking about it.
This is the Under the Radar Podcast. Oh, speaking of trolling, I think I used to troll Visionary a little back in the day.
The predecessor to trolling today. You're the founding father.
They had that anonymous surfer guy used to go in your guest book and fuck with you guys. But it wasn't me the whole time, though. I only did it once or twice because I knew that guy. I don't know who the real one was, but I know everybody was getting really mad at him. So when everybody would get really, really pissed off, I would just go in there and say some more shit to egg it on. And then I'm like, it's awesome. Yeah, we had to take us out of their guy.
Visionaryband.50megs.com was our... Actually, that site is still up, I want to say. I'm going to actually try to look it up right now.
Yeah, I remember I think I only did that maybe two or three times, but people got so mad, man. I don't know, the fans, I guess. Yeah, fans. We can say fans. Just people that were fans of yours would go on there and they'd be like defending your honor and stuff. Like, and I'm like,
some sort of royalty. I'm like, dude, I live with my parents.
Yeah.
My castle is a 3-bedroom house.
17.
And it's in the suburbs of Lake Worth.
This is the Under the Radar Podcast.
All right, well, that was interesting, almost 3 hours, and I appreciate it, and we'll do this again, sure, and once we get all the nooks and crannies worked out and you figure out, the next time, and good luck on your next interview with, what's your name again? Stephanie.
Stephanie.
Good deal with that. That's cool. She's got her own thing going on, and man, appreciate the invite, and let's see if we can get some video and some music going with it.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for taking the time out to hang out tonight.
Taking time out because it was hard to do this on both ends. I mean, with work scheduling and you say you had class and family life and holy cow. So that window of opportunity was upon us, and it is now coming to an end. And I do appreciate it.
Yeah.
Once again.
Yeah, like definitely.
You
said,
if you do this again, I'm definitely on board.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I mean, it seems like this one went pretty well, so we'll put it out there. We'll get it rolling a little bit and see where it goes.